approached one of the gates at the Vatican. BBC News. Well, now on Radio 4, our new classic serial stars John Hurt, Blake Ritson and David Warner in a three-part dramatisation of Dante Alighieri's great work, The Divine Comedy, a poet's journey through hell, purgatory and paradise. We begin today in the darkest of these places, where the souls in hell suffer terrible torments for their sins on earth, and where Dante witnesses some disturbing and painful sights. The Divine Comedy, Inferno.
Nel mezzo del cammin di nostra vita, mi ritrovai per una selva oscura, che la diretta via era smarrita.
In the middle of the path through life we all must take, I found myself in a dark wood where the way ahead was no longer clear. It was Good Friday in the year of our Lord 1300, and I, Dante Alighieri, was 35.
It's hard to describe how wild, savage, and terrifying that wood was. I can't even remember how I got there. The time now was close to dawn, and I saw lions and leopards and wolves, and they howled and roared around me. I was like a man with high hopes who suddenly felt he had lost everything.
Please, save me, or I am lost forever.
And then suddenly the beasts became silent, and a figure appeared before me. A venerable figure, full of authority, but one who seemed hoarse from long silence.
Don't be frightened.
Who are you? Are you a ghost or a living being?
I was a living being once. I lived in Rome during the time of the Emperor Augustus. I was a poet, and I wrote the story of how Aeneas fled from burning Troy and founded the city of Rome.
Then you are Virgil?
Yes, I was Virgil.
Everything I've learnt, I've learnt from the study of your wonderful epic. All I know about poetry and language comes from you. You are my poetic master.
If I were not a spirit now, I could be embarrassed by your praise.
Oh, master, please help me. I am completely lost. Is there any way out of this horrible place?
Yes, there is. But you will have to accept me as your guide.
Willingly. Oh, willingly.
I warn you that the journey we must take will not be an easy one. Through hell, purgatory, and paradise. No living person has ever made such a journey.
So why have I been chosen?
Let us talk as we go. Unless, of course, you wish to linger here in this wood.
No, of course not. Please, poet, lead on.
I'm older now. Many years older. And by comparison, I do feel more at peace with myself. But those years have left their scars. In 1300, I was a man in a position of power in Florence, respected and trusted. By the next year, I was in exile. Even now, some 20 years later, I still do not know if I will ever return to my hometown.
You don't mind if I call you master? Believe me, it's not idle flattery. Your work means so much to me.
Then master I shall be. I am honored.
But I can't quite believe this is happening. I'm not a hero like your Aeneas or like St. Paul, who braved everything to spread Christ's word. I fear I'm going to be a great disappointment to you.
Why do you think that?
Because I'm so unworthy. I don't understand why I've been chosen.
Then allow me to explain further. I am here at the command of a lady now dead, who once you knew.
Beatrice.
She is the fair and blessed lady who asked me to accompany you. She looked down from above and became concerned for your spiritual well-being.
Beatrice. I loved her from afar and never spoke to her. She died when she was only 24, but I loved her with a passion I've never felt for anyone else.
She wants to help you transform that love into something higher and more profound.
I need that help. All the physical and mental certainties of my life have been taken away.
That is what she understands, and that is why I have been sent to you. So will you follow where I lead?
To the gates of hell, Master.
Dinanzi a me non fuor cose create, se non eterne, e io eterno duro. Lasciate ogni speranza, voi ch'entrate.
Nothing was created before me except eternal things, and I am also eternal. Abandon all hope, you who enter here.
These words above the gate, they terrify me.
You are come to a place of grief and regret. Here, take my hand.
But
come. We are on our way into the depths of hell. Come. Don't be frightened.
Suddenly, strange tongues, horrible outcries, words of pain and anger, a tumult of noise like a never-ending sandstorm. Master, what is this noise? Who are these people?
They are the nothing people. They were too apathetic to do either good or evil on Earth, so they threw their lives away. Now heaven has no place for them, and hell rejects them because they would give the wicked somebody to boast over. The world has no memory of them, and mercy and justice disdain them because they did nothing with their lives.
I think I see people I once knew.
That is more than likely.
And all this agony because they did nothing.
Look, and then let us pass on.
But I don't feel ready. I feel...
You must trust in me and the lady who sent me. Will you do that?
I will do my best, Master.
I looked ahead and saw a line of people waiting on the shores of a great river. A line so long that I would never have believed death had undone so many.
Souls. Not long dead, and no doubt you're waiting there anxiously on the banks for judgment. Maybe you think you might just be in with a chance of getting into heaven. Well, if you are, forget it. And here's the clue. I'm Charon, the ferryman of hell. I'm here to row you over the Acheron to the other shore, into the eternal darkness, into fire and into ice. Just a moment, who are you?
Do you mean me?
Yes, you! You're still alive!
He's no right to be here.
It's been willed in that place where whatever is willed can be done.
Well, let them sort out how he's getting there. Come on, the rest of you! Next! Ferry boat to hell!
Charon, with his eyes like hot coals, collected them all in, hitting with his oar anyone who lingered, and they set sail across the brown water. But even before they had landed on the other shore, a fresh crowd had collected around us. But then, without warning, the earth trembled violently. A crimson light flashed, and I fell unconscious. Heavy thunder broke my deep sleep. I found myself on the other side of the River Acheron, my master still by my side. We stood on the brink of a deep abyss.
It is time for us to descend.
Master, you're pale. You're my strength in doubt, so how shall I go where you fear to go?
It is not fear you see in my face. It is pity for the anguish of the people we will see below. It is not an abyss, but a funnel burrowing down into the bowels of hell. And all the damned lie there in the place judged appropriate.
Master, I'm scared.
Give me your hand once more. This is Limbo, and the men and women here have not sinned. But though they have great merit, it is not enough because they were born before Christ came into the world, and they did not worship God as God should be worshipped. And I'm one of them.
I feel sorry for you. For all of you.
We live in desire for something we will never have. But otherwise we do not suffer.
But there must be so many great and virtuous people here, and they're being punished simply for being born at the wrong time.
We are not being punished. We live suspended in limbo.
No, I...
It is time to descend to the second circle of hell.
Suspended in limbo. Oh, yes. I understand what that means. I was in Rome on a diplomatic mission when word came from Florence that there'd been a coup. My political allies had been defeated and I had been exiled on pain of death. I sat and wept. A man without a purpose or a home.
I came into a place void of light, and the spirits within it were caught up in a whirlwind which blew them hither and thither like a flock of starlings battling against the winds.
This is the circle of the lustful.
Those two there! I think I recognize them!
If you want to speak to them, ask them in the name of the love that compels them onwards, and they will come.
Poor weary souls! If it's allowed, come and speak with us! Tell me of your love!
Nessun maggior dolore che ricordarsi del tempo felice nella miseria.
There is no greater pain than to recall a happy time in wretchedness. O kind and generous living creature, thank you for speaking to us. I am Francesca de Rimini, and this man weeping beside me is Paolo Malatesta, my brother-in-law. He fell in love with the fair body I used to inhabit, but my spirit no longer possesses them. It was love which led the two of us to find a single death at the hands of my husband. My husband, our murderer, will find his punishment elsewhere, but we suffer here, blown by the winds. One day, just for pleasure, Paolo and I were reading the romance of Lancelot. You may remember he loved King Arthur's wife, Guinevere, and the book told of the terrible constraints he felt. Paolo and I were alone. Till then, we had no suspicion of our true feelings. Several times while we were reading, our eyes would meet and our faces would change color. But one particular moment overwhelmed us. It was when Guinevere finally gave her love a much longed-for smile. And then we read how Lancelot poured kisses on that smile, and we were lost. My Paolo who will never, ever be divided from me now, kissed my mouth, all trembling, and we read the book no more. The wind is rising again. We are powerless against it. It will blow us wherever it wants to blow us forever. Traveler, farewell. Farewell.
Farewell, Francesca. Farewell, Paola. I pity you.
And I fell down, like a dead body falls.
You've descended to the third circle. The circle of unending, accursed, cold and heavy rain. Never fresh, never renewed. The ground it falls on gives off a foul smell, and its inhabitants sink into it half drowned.
And what sort of people are confined to this wretched place?
The gluttonous. Those who thought more of stuffing their own stomachs than anything else. There is Cerberus, a three-headed dog of hell. He takes hold of the mud-bound spirits and gnaws and tears them. He is only quiet when he bites into his prey. See what I mean? Those who greedily devoured on Earth are greedily devoured here. Over and over again. Are you ready to descend once more?
If you'll lead me.
Here, I saw greater numbers of souls than I'd seen so far. And they were divided into two separate gangs who were painfully rolling heavy stones forward with their chests. And now and then, their huge stones would clash against each other. But no one would give way.
What are you holding on to that for? You stinking bastard!
And again the stones would clash unceasingly, accompanied by obscene threats and brutal insults.
Why are you throwing that away, you stupid waster?
This is the circle of those who wasted their wealth and those who hoarded it, the spendthrifts and the misers. And they are perpetually locked in painful, brooding conflict.
But some of the men have tonsured heads. There must be priests here.
Yes, and not just parish priests. But time presses.
How lucky I am to have found a place of peace here in Ravenna after the years of wandering and despair. A place where I'm respected and cared for. But in my mind and in my poem, I continue to journey.
Now we are heading for the regions which contain those who deliberately chose the evil path they followed. Those whose natures were by choice disposed towards violence, heresy, fraud, and treachery. The sights will be more savage still.
So, what are those walls I see ahead?
They belong to the city of Dis, our point of entry.
I trust in you to protect me.
The city's walls were made of iron. And on its gates a thousand spirits stared down upon us. They belong to the fallen angels, those who had challenged God's power and had been thrown out of heaven.
Entry is denied.
I don't understand.
Entry is denied.
But why?
The traveler is still alive. He cannot travel through the realms of the dead. He is required to return the way he came, to his point of origin. You, being dead, may proceed.
I must protest. The arrangements for his journey have been agreed.
Not by the authorities here.
You must let him through, I insist.
Entry is denied.
You look pale, Master.
I don't know what to do. The rebel angels never stop rebelling. They are ferocious still.
I couldn't retrace my steps without you.
Don't worry, I will not abandon you. We must hope for help. And I think it is at hand.
Suddenly, the fallen angels scattered, like frogs running from a hostile snake. A heavenly messenger appeared.
Rebel angels of Dis, will you never learn? Why make more pain and trouble for yourselves? Let the travelers enter.
Then the angel touched the gate with a wand, and it flew open.
We can enter now. Thank you, messenger.
But the angel had already flown away. The look in its eye suggested it had more important matters on its mind. And as we advanced into Dis, I held to Virgil and shut my eyes for fear of what I would see. I opened my eyes. We were in a strange wood without any paths, and trees grew there unlike any other trees I have ever seen. Dark leaves dropped from the twisted and deformed branches, and there was no fruit, just poisonous thorns. And above the foliage hovered the harpies, with broad wings, sharp claws, and cruel human faces. And again they swooped upon the trees.
I hear cries of anguish everywhere, but I can't see anybody who could be making those sounds. Are they hiding among the trees?
Break off a little twig.
Why?
Just do it.
What are you doing? Are you trying to tear me apart?
There's blood flowing out of the twig.
We once were men. Show some compassion, please.
Forgive me, Spirit. I don't know otherwise how else to make him understand. The souls here belong to those who chose to kill themselves.
But to kill yourself and end up like this.
Have you never known despair?
I have been close to it. I found myself in a dark wood.
I come like you from Florence. I wanted simply to live my life. The endless battles between the political parties ruined my peace and my livelihood. And finally, they destroyed my homestead. I made a gallows for myself out of the remnants of my house. Oh, unhappy me. Unhappy city. I should not have despaired, but I did.
Poi che la carità del natio loco mi strinse.
Because of the love I still felt for my native Florence, I gathered up the scattered leaves and gave them back to the suicide, whose voice was already fading away.
My master led me then from the wood to the center of the seventh circle, a bare plain of burning sand. Spread across it were scattered groups of naked souls, and all the while large flakes of fire rained down continuously upon them.
This is the place for those who were violent against God and nature. The blasphemers lie helpless on the ground. Those who offended nature are given a little more freedom.
Dad, Gary, do you recognize me? I know, my face must be scorched beyond recognition.
Brunetto Latini.
Brunetto Latini was my early mentor. He was funny and gossipy and consumed by a love for literature and boys.
I'm so glad you know me. Please don't be angry if I walk with you a while and let the others go on.
With all my heart. And if my master agrees, let's sit down and talk properly about the old times.
So you don't understand. If any one of us stops even for a moment, then we have to lie where we stopped for a century while fires fall down relentlessly upon us. And we are forbidden even to fan ourselves. So forgive me if I walk beside you before I rejoin my band.
Master,
it is allowed. What I don't understand is that you're still alive. So, what are you doing down here?
In the world above, I lost my way. And my master is leading me home along a new path.
I used to be your guide when you were a young man.
Yes, no, I remember. And I will always be grateful. You helped me when I was first starting out to be a writer, and you gave me good advice.
Your Vita Nuova was a very fine collection of sonnets. Now, of course, as with most writers, the praise will only come after your death. And the Florentines will loathe what you've done. So little time and so much I want to say. This is a hard price to pay for liking sex with men.
I'm sorry, but the teachings of the church...
Look around you. Hundreds of priests are here. They preferred men too, but lied about it. There are others who made no pretense about their desires, but they are punished too. Not just the artistic, but warriors and leaders too. I suffer even for talking to you. I have to rejoin my unhappy traveling companions.
Brunetto!
No!
Please!
No!
I'm sorry, you must let him go. Because here comes another class of sinners who are punished on these burning sands.
Like dogs on a hot summer day trying to fend off flies or horse ticks, these men hit out to try and shield themselves from the scalding flames. But each man had his eyes fixed upon a bag which hung round his neck, each with its own particular colour and design.
Some of these men I recognise.
They are the moneylenders, the bankers.
I'm from Padua, but let me tell you, the bankers in Florence are just as bad. In fact, the bankers are going to take over Florence one day. You see this bag? This is my bonus.
It's, well filled.
That's what you think. But look at his bag over there. It's much bigger than mine. That's Florentine bankers for you. Greedy, unprincipled, grasping.
May I look inside your bag?
No, don't touch it! Whatever is in there is entirely my business. You've no right to interfere.
Not bigger than mine.
Nobody touch it!
And they fell to kicking and biting each other as the flames poured down upon their burning flesh.
I saw men burned to death in the city square of Florence. I heard their screams. I smelt the burning flesh. If I'd returned to Florence, they would have burnt me too.
Let's leave them to their squabbles. We are heading now for the lowest circles of hell, and we must make use of some rather unusual transport.
I looked on in fear as the monster swam up from the deep towards us. Its face was human, and as gentle and honest a face as you could hope to see. But the rest of his body was like a hideous reptile with two large hairy paws.
This is the monster Geryon. Look at his face and then look at his body and you can see that he is the perfect image of deception. Shall we climb aboard?
Onto the monster's back.
It is the only way we can travel to the lower depths.
Then I have no choice.
It's probably better if you climb up first and sit at the front. I'll sit in the middle so that you won't be hurt by the lashing of Geryon's tail.
The tail?
It's like a scorpion's, but a bit more venomous.
My Lady Beatrice wishes me to mount this monster.
She wishes you to complete your journey. Climb aboard.
I'm doing my best.
Allor fu io più timido e lo stoscio, però chi vidi fuochi e sentì pianti, ond io tremando tutto mi raccoscio.
Once I was mounted, what I feared most was dismounting. For I saw fires and heard cries of despair, so that I sat there hunched up and terrified.
Geryon set us down, and free from our weight, shot off like an arrow from a bowstring.
He has brought us down into the eighth circle of hell. This is the region known as Melebolge, which belongs to the deceitful. They are crammed into nooks and crannies all over its surface, separated from each other by bridges and roads. It's like a hideous version of a busy city.
This is all for the deceitful. But all human beings deceive themselves in some way or other.
Of course. But here, the picture changes.
In what way?
This place is about deliberate deceit, which completely destroys the trust and love between human beings. The people here cared nothing for others and ignored the corrosive power of lies and more lies. Finally, they lost all sense of the difference between truth and falsehood and trapped themselves in endless deception. Trapped there, we find the pimps. Here are the flatterers, people who would say anything to get what they want, sinking deeper and deeper into excrement.
What are you looking at, you bastard?
Do I know you?
Gives you a kick, does it? Seeing me stuck in shit.
You're Alessio Intermine from Luke.
So I flattered a load of arseholes because I thought it would help my career. Is that a reason for me to be buried in human orgy?
But how much damage did your flattering lies do?
Started a war, maybe. They would have happened anyway. By the way, Dante Alighieri, I've always admired you. I've always thought you'd go great places. So maybe we can do a deal.
I only wanted to listen.
This seems harsh, but you would have been wasting your time. He is beyond redemption. And I do not think you will feel much sympathy for these buried here.
The cries came from bodies fixed in round, narrow holes, head downwards, so that only the feet and parts of the legs were visible. And over the soles of their feet, flames flickered and burned.
Who are they?
Those who prostituted the things of God for gold and silver. Those who committed the sin of simony, the buying and selling of ecclesiastical offices. Churchmen who cared only for material possessions and ignored their spiritual commitments.
That one over there seems louder than the others. And the flames which burn him are fiercer.
Alas, he was once a pope.
A pope?
Is that you, Boniface? I thought you should be two here by now.
I don't understand.
It's the late Pope, Nicholas III. He thinks you're Pope Boniface, whom he's expecting to join him.
Join him? In the same hole?
No, he's not the only pope down here. They're all crammed head to toe in one long, dark hole.
It must be unbearably uncomfortable.
Meant to be unbearably uncomfortable. Listen to them.
Boniface, is that you?
What do I do?
Speak to him. Tell him Boniface isn't dead yet.
I'm not the person you think I am. He's still alive.
He'll be here soon enough. And then he'll get his feet burned and I'll move down further into this hellhole.
Well, I am sad that a pope has come to such a terrible end.
You're sad. How about me? A man who held the highest office of the church and lived in luxury. Take on the flames!
All through my exile, I've cherished a vision thousands shared, of a Holy Roman Emperor who would unite not just Italy, but all Christendom under a benign and just rule. Maybe we were naive, but we needed a vision to inspire us and give us hope. And the popes, Nicholas and Boniface, particularly Boniface, did their best to destroy it. They were only interested in their own power and their own wealth, and I can never forgive them. Boniface was clever, greedy, and unprincipled. I could not wait to put him into hell.
Then he led me where we looked down into a pit filled with writhing serpents. And among them ran spirits, naked and terrified, without hope of relief or escape from the writhing coils.
Here lie the thieves. Not the petty thieves who stole on impulse or from need, but those who stole deliberately and relentlessly on a monstrous scale.
Dante! Dante Alighieri!
I seem to have a lot of acquaintances in hell.
I think that's quite normal. Speak to him.
Who is it who calls me?
Vanni! Vanni Fucci!
A violent, depraved man. We were always on different sides in Florentine politics, I'm happy to say.
Why? Why am I bothering to speak to a bastard like you? I bet you love it. See me suffer like this. And I'm not going to give you the pleasure.
You can command him to stay if you wish.
Tell me what you want to say, Vanni Fucci.
I have no power to refuse. And yet I hate the fact that you see me in this wretched state covered in these filthy snakes. It's because of all those treasures I stole from the sacristy in the cathedral at Pistoia. I managed to get somebody else fingered for the job. But of course, that sort of trick doesn't work down here. They know me for a thief. But I say, there are worse things than a thief. Ah! Oh, I bet you're laughing now, I bet. But let me tell you something which I know will upset you. You've been exiled from Florence, but you probably think they're going to forgive you and invite you back. But from what I've heard, it isn't going to happen.
How do you...
I don't know where you'll end up when you're dead. For the rest of your life is going to be bloody miserable.
But I...
And that's fine by me, you sanctimonious bastard.
And now comes more pain and more flames, but always different, always appropriate to the sinner.
Look down and see. Vanni Fucci was a blunt instrument compared with these evil counselors.
Again, figures running, screaming in pain across a barren landscape. Again, flames lick around them. Each one is like a burning torch, and the flames flick around them like so many moving tongues.
Those you find here are those of great intellectual power who misapplied their gifts to lead others astray. Enveloped in their lies, they no longer saw anything else.
But I can see there are great men here from myth, from history.
Why are you surprised? Listen to the words of Ulysses, the wise and wily counselor of the Greeks whose devious brain conceived the wooden horse which finally conquered the city of Troy. Once the war was over, Ulysses led his warriors through many perils back to Ithaca and his wife Penelope. But at the end of his life, he could not stop himself from persuading his aging warriors to follow him on one last fatal journey.
Nothing could stop me.
neither affection for my son, Telemachus, nor my duty towards my aged father, not even the love I owed Penelope, could stop me from my desire to gain more experience of the world and the people who live in it. I put forth upon the open sea with a single ship, filled with a small company of those men who still trusted me. We were old and slow, but we came eventually to the Pillars of Hercules. Beyond there, no one knew what lay ahead. So I said to my aging and uncertain companions, "We've been through many dangers, so why should we hesitate now? We should still be grasping at experience and exploring the unknown. You are men. Why hold back now?" And I spoke so well and so eloquently that I worked my companions up into such enthusiasm for going on that there was no holding them back. At first, all went well. For 5 days, we sailed onwards in safety through that dangerous passage, and then ahead of us suddenly appeared a high mountain. We all rejoiced, but it was the beginning of our end. For suddenly, a storm blew up and struck the prow of our ship. 3 times the waters made our boat whirl round. The 4th time, as the divine power above pleased, the poop rose up and then went down and the sea closed forever above us. I urged them on, and I killed them.
Spirit, it is time for you to depart.
Willingly. Oh, willingly.
But he inspired men.
To their death.
But at least...
But at least what?
At least he offered them a hope, an aspiration towards something beyond themselves.
The hope was false. Still, you are right in thinking there are worse leaders than that. For example, religious leaders who persuade their followers to conquer and kill all those who oppose them.
And how are they punished?
Devils torment them. They are punished with innumerable diseases and live in darkness and breathe tainted air. But there is a punishment equal to each crime. They are pulled apart by demons, but each in an appropriately sectarian way.
There is something monotonous about how people use religion as an excuse for their unhappiness and envy. Enough is enough. Let us not linger here anymore.
I bring you now to the last pit in Malebolge, and it is the darkest and it smells the worst. Here lie the falsifiers, those who use false science, counterfeiting and impersonation to deceive others.
Here the sinners, all isolated, lie at random around the pit, suffering hideous diseases from dropsy to leprosy, which swell their features and make them all but unrecognizable.
You! Up there!
What is it?
I'm Master Adam, the forger, burned at the stake in Florence for creating false and debased money.
I remember. You and your associates created financial chaos in the city. But you're not Italian, are you?
No, I'm English. Though the English like to pretend the Italians have a monopoly on all the sexier vices.
He looked grotesque. Swollen with dropsy, his lips always parted. His body was twisted like a lute, with legs hanging uselessly below.
But it was your countrymen dropped me in it, the Guidis. I'd like to get my hands on them and strangle the bastards. Only problem is my condition. If I could move an inch every 100 years, I'd start. But I can't even manage that.
So, who's that who lies beside you?
Oh, he was here when I arrived. You can't choose your companions here, unfortunately. This is Sinon the Greek. He was the smooth-talking sort who actually persuaded the Trojans to take Ulysses' wooden horse into Troy. He's got the most terrible foul disease and he stinks to high heaven.
Who are you calling smelly, you squirm bastard?
I've still got an arm to smack your face.
Wasn't much use to you when they burned you to death. Was it?
Ow, oh, oh, and I suppose you told the truth to those Trojan dupes. They were all slaughtered because of your sweet talking.
You didn't need to linger.
I know.
Crazy. I'm sorry. It interested you, didn't it? There's something alluring to human beings about going down into the very depths of despair.
The air was thick and gloomy as we descended into the central pit, or ninth circle, where Satan himself is placed.
Master, what's that sound? And what terrible city lies ahead of us?
Those are not towers you see through the gloom. They are the figures of the giants who once walked the world. But nature did well when she stopped making such figures. They were colossal and powerful, but they lacked the brains for anything except mindless violence. So now they are put to use to guard the access to the lowest region of hell.
Visitors!
No visitors here.
But we have been granted privileged access by the powers in paradise above.
No visitors.
I don't think you quite grasp exactly who this is. He's a famous poet, and he's writing a poem about his experiences. So, if you agree to carry him down to the circle below, your name will be mentioned in his poem.
You're sure?
Completely sure. You are Antaeus, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. That's Antaeus with an A.
I've made a note. You will be mentioned.
Suddenly, a huge hand reached towards us out of the darkness. It grasped us both. But as quickly as we were lifted up, we were set down in the lowest part of the universe, the most remote from the source of all light and heat. We were walking across a frozen lake. But when I looked down, I saw the ice resembled glass, not water. And there were souls buried in the ice, with barely their eyes and mouths visible. I'd heard a strange sound, but now I knew what it was. It was the chattering of their teeth in the cold.
I would spare you the next sight.
Two frozen heads in one hole so close that one head was a cap to the other, and the one above was putting his teeth into the head of the one below, gnawing his brain as if it were bread.
I am Count Ugolino della Gerardesca. You may well think of me as a traitor because I betrayed our cause and handed several castles over to the enemy. But what I did is nothing compared with what this man did. He is Archbishop Ruggieri degli Ubaldini, who promised me safe conduct if I agreed to come over to the other side. But he broke his word and condemned me and my four young sons to death, but a truly terrible death. Yes, Ruggieri, you shall hear this. We were locked up in a narrow cell in a dark tower. by dreams that first night, as you can imagine, were full of tears and foreboding. And when I awoke, I heard my sons weeping in their sleep and asking for bread. And we waited. And the hour when we had been given food the first day came and went. But there was nothing. My sons wept, but I could not. I was turning into stone inside. "What's the matter, father?" my little Anselm asked. But I said nothing. Neither that day nor the next, when the same thing happened. A small beam of light found its way into our cell, and I saw my son's pale and sad faces. I bit on both my hands for grief, and my sons, thinking this was a sign of hunger, said it would upset them less if I would eat them instead. That day and the next, we were all silent. I wish the earth had opened up before us, because on the fourth day, my little Gado fell at my feet crying, "Father, please help me." There he died, and I saw my other three sons fall lifeless, one by one, between the fifth and the sixth day.
On Dio mi diedi, già cieco, a brancolar soffra ciascuno.
Already blind, I groped over the bodies of each of my sons, talking to them for 2 days after they were dead. But finally, hunger became more powerful than grief.
Boys were innocent. And the Archbishop is punished harder than the traitor. The cold winds blow through all of the circle of treachery. Traitors to their city and country lead traitors to their friends and their guests. Traitors to their lords and benefactors. And traitors to our Lord himself. Your Lord, I should say. Judas Iscariot, chief among them.
I had imagined heat, and I find cold.
There is no warmth of any kind here. And at the center of this final circle sits the arch-betrayer himself, Satan, who rebelled against God and was thrown down to the bottom of hell.
The Emperor of the Realm of Pain had half his chest sticking out of the ice. I am closer in size to one of the giants than the giants are to the size of his arms.
Se el fusi bel com elie e ora bruto e contra il suo fature alzo le ciglia, ben dei da lui procedere ogni luto.
If he was once as beautiful as he is ugly now, and yet dared to challenge his maker, then all our afflictions may well come from him. He sits here, half frozen in ice, ugly and unmoving, devouring the world's greatest traitors perpetually in his mouth.
Of course, evil can be attractive. We have all been tempted, and most of us have succumbed at one time or another. It's part of what makes us human. But what I have learnt the hard way from my years of wandering across Italy and the encounters I have had is that when you look evil in the face, it is not alluring. It is cold, banal, and sterile.
It is time to go. We have seen all there is to see here, and it is time to go.
Willingly.
Hold tight. Because we must climb up Satan's body to leave all this evil behind.
We climb up. But, won't that take us back the way we came?
Trust me, please.
Weary and frightened.
Of what lies ahead?
The journey is long, you said.
Don't you want to see purgatory and paradise?
Of course, but...
Follow me. We are nearly out into the bright world again.
And then a journey into purgatory.
Just a few more steps.
Keep climbing.
It was the morning of Easter Sunday. We mounted up, first him, then me. And so we came out and once more saw the stars.
E quindi uscimmo a riveder le stelle.
In the Divine Comedy, Inferno by Dante Alighieri, Dante the Poet was played by Blake Ritson, the older Dante by John Hurt, and Virgil by David Warner. The Lost Souls were Sam Dale, Michael Burtonshaw, Priyanga Burford, David Kahn, Clive Haywood, Steve Toussaint, and Cassie Layton. The Divine Comedy is dramatized by Stephen Wyatt, sound design is by Caleb Knightley, and the directors are Emma Harding and Mark Beebe.
And you can hear the second part of the Divine Comedy, Purgatorio, at the same time next week. After the news, the acclaimed South African writer Damon Galgut talks to Mariella Frostrup about his novel Arctic Summer. Kate Colquhoun and Judith Flanders discuss Victorian true crime and why it is truly the template of all crime writing today. And A.L. Kennedy pluckily road tests new writing apps, all in open book in a couple of minutes.